Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of The Beat. I'm, of course, Nick Baumgartner, along here on Monday with Austin Meek for some more Michigan football talk. Austin, it is getting worse. I don't know how else to say this, man. It is getting worse. Somehow, it is getting worse.
Nick, I like to think of myself as being kind of the, you know, the level-headed, reasonable person. I try to look at both sides and see the nuance and, you know, see things in, you know, in shades of gray and whatever. There's no shade of gray that you can put on that game. That was just bad. Start to finish, it was just awful.
Best way to put it, I think. No nuance left in this situation as it sits today. And with Jim Harbaugh's tenure at Michigan, I think, and you've come to know this, there's a lot of nuance that often happens here. And a lot of times that can get sort of conflated with sort of narrative structuring that seems to absolve him of things. But in this case, there's none of that. This was a team for the third straight week that took a field that wasn't ready to play, that continued to look to its sideline for answers and continued to come up empty-handed. And, you know, it got to a point, you know, in that game where, and it just the same way as it was in some parts of the Indiana game and even the Michigan State game, Austin, I think, where, you know, and this is telling. I mean, you started to feel bad for the kids on the field because they were in situations that you knew that they just weren't going to have any answer, especially in the first half. The body language completely fell apart. And, you know, you hate to say, you know, you hate to point to effort and stuff with 18, 19-year-old kids and just blanket it like that, like we would an NFL player. But, you know, you look at that and you say, well, what goes into those sorts of things? And I think that, you know, the lack of trust in the plan that is happening on the sideline seems to be permeating through just everything. And I don't know how else to look at that other than you had guys that were defeated, and they were defeated very early and tried to, you know, some of them stiff upper lipped it as best they could, but a lot of them just, you know, that's the sign of a team that, you know, quit is not a word that I like to use because I don't think, you know, I think literal quitting means you've walked off the field, right? And I don't like to do that with players who, you know, put helmets and shoulder pads on there and go out there and hit for four quarters because I don't think anybody who plays the full game quits. But they were defeated, and they didn't have an answer, and it was very, very early, and that is the telltale sign of a team that is going absolutely nowhere. I don't know how else to say it. I mean, they're stuck and going backward pretty fast, and not much by way of answers from anybody in the program right now.
I know for myself, there have been many times this year since we started doing all of this that I have had to ask myself, like, you know, what are we doing here? I mean, seriously, we're in the middle of a pandemic. The Big Ten wasn't going to play. Mm-hmm. Now we're playing football. We're halfway through the year. It's a weird year for everybody. You know, all around the country, we're seeing games canceled. We're seeing teams having to shut down because of outbreaks. So I can only imagine that if you're a player on a team like Michigan where things are going south, there has to be that thought at some point of, you know, what are we doing here? Like, what's yeah. our, you know, what's our motivation for this? What's getting us out of bed every morning to get on that field? And, you know, there are teams that, you know, are contending. And if you're Ohio State, you know, you've got that answer. You know what you're playing for. You've got a chance to win a national championship, and you're going to, you know, do everything in your power to get up every single day and work toward that goal. And Michigan is in a place now where I would imagine that guys are looking around and being like, hey, we're 1-3. Things are not going well. We don't really have all the big goals that we have for our season. Most of them are off the table now. And, you know, you in those situations, you look to the very top for answers. And right now, it just doesn't feel like Jim Harbaugh has an answer. You know, I thought it was notable that up until Saturday, he had been, you know, sticking pretty close to a pretty familiar refrain about how the team looks good in practice. He has confidence in his players. Yep. Feels like they're really close to putting it all together. And you know when he's saying that it's, you know, he's speaking optimistically. He's not speaking realistically. He's not going to come out there and, you know, just say his team stinks. If you're waiting for Jim Harbaugh to do that, he's not going to do it. Right. But I did think it was notable that after that game, he was about as unvarnished as he gets. I mean, honestly, Nick, it reminded me of listening to him after that Wisconsin game last year. That's really the only other time I've heard him say in such stark terms that, hey, things are not where we need to be. This program is not in a good place. We got to get it fixed, and it's got to start with me.
Yeah, I think Harbaugh's proven over the years to be a guy that if there's a way to frame something in a positive light that allows him to, you know, maybe ignore a bunch of other stuff that he obviously knows needs to be fixed in a public setting, then he's going to take it. But like, you nailed it, because the two games in the Ohio State debacles really are the other ones. I mean, they got blown out there in 15, blown out in 18, blown out again last year. Those are the only ones that I can think back on and say, well, those are the only times really where he's just looked up and said, look, guys, we just got our asses kicked. Like, I don't know what else to say. It was a complete meltdown in every single scenario, situation, whatever else. And obviously that's what you saw, because there's just nothing else to, there's nothing else to grab onto. I mean, it was one of those things, but I think at the end of the day here, it goes back to a process situation that is happening that we frankly just don't, you and I and no one in the media has an answer to, because we're not allowed to see anything that Michigan does on a day-to-day, you know, minute-by-minute basis, obviously. But it's the same scenario that's popped up in different years. But in other years, Harbaugh's had players that have been good enough and tough enough mentally to sort of stop it, to put a stop to the slide. Like, I can remember vividly, and I've never forgotten this, in 2016, when the best team he's had, and the best team Michigan's had in probably 20 years, or at least one of the best anyway, they lost that game at Iowa where Wilton Spate separated his shoulder. It was at night, and Iowa wasn't great, but Michigan was like number two. It cost them a chance to the playoff. You know, if they win that game, everything in this tenure might look different, all that sort of thing, right? It was a flashpoint game. And he goes in after the game, and, you know, they rush the field at Iowa the whole shot, and we barely got into the press conference after in time, and he's, you know, given the one-word answers and everything. And at one point, he just kind of said, look, you know, it's up to the, you know, these guys at some point have got to learn, I'm paraphrasing now, but at some point they've got to learn that, you know, you've got to be able to make things go your way during a game. That's what players have to learn. You got to make things go your way. It doesn't always work the way you've scripted it out to. In a game, something's going to happen. You've got to be able to, as a player, look within yourself to turn that back. And I remember thinking that day, even with that team that was loaded with veterans, well, isn't it your job as a college football coach to install confidence or an ability to get those players into a situation where their confidence is so good that they're not going to get knocked off kilter to a point where they can't recover? Like, that's in the NFL, that's an answer. In college, it's not an answer. And in that season, although it didn't end the way Michigan wanted to, that team competed the rest of the way because they were good enough to do it. In 2017, they had guys that were good enough to hold the rope. In 18, same thing. And now the recruiting has died off, and that answer is gone. These are college players. They're not professionals, and you have to have a level of trust with them on a really granular level that, I'm sorry, I don't know how you argue that that's the case here right now. And that's the biggest thing that if we can just, we're speculating because we don't know. But from our vantage point, looking outside in, that's what this looks like. It looks like a team that doesn't trust its plan, and which in turn means that it doesn't trust what Jim Harbaugh's telling them at the top. And I don't, that's a bad thing for a college team. And, you know, it'll be up to him to prove otherwise very quickly here, because that can spiral, as we all know, very fast, as it has, and just, it can get worse, believe it or not, as we said at the beginning here.
Yeah, that's the biggest problem right now, is it's going backwards. Every week has been a regression. I mean, week one to week two to week three to week four, they've gotten worse every single week. And even the things that you felt okay about 2 weeks ago, now all of a sudden, those are problems too. I mean, starting with the quarterback position, and look, I wrote it a week ago after that Indiana game that, hey, things are not looking good right now, but at least Joe Milton is somebody to be excited about.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden you can't even say that. And look, I was surprised after I wrote that a week ago, how many fans responded with a lot of skepticism about whether Joe Milton was the long-term answer at quarterback. And I think some of that maybe was just the frustration in the moment that we're 1-2 and we just lost to Indiana and I don't want to hear anything good about any of our players.
Right.
But I have to say, you know, some of that at least has been vindicated, because Joe Milton was not good on Saturday. There's no way to spin that otherwise. I thought he was pretty good the first 3 weeks. He was not good on Saturday. You know, the first interception, he throws a ball to Nick Eubanks that should have been caught, bounces off his hands.
Right.
It's an interception. Things just snowballed down from there. You know, the second interception was one of those passes that, you know, he shouldn't have thrown it. Maybe it's a throw that, because Joe Milton can throw it 100 miles an hour, maybe he thought he could get it past that guy. I don't know. Bad interception. Cade McNamara comes in the third quarter and, you know, comes out with his pants on fire and leads a touchdown drive. I don't know what that means for the future. I don't know what to make of anything right now, other than, you know, even the things that you thought you could feel okay about, all of a sudden, I'm not sure there's anything really that you can hang your hat on right now.
Yeah, and you, let me just say, to start here with Milton, I mean, you were correct, and I think that your eye was not lying to you when you said that, you know, after those first 3 weeks and you wrote what you wrote, because I wrote similar and I still believe it. I mean, I think Joe Milton's got a very high ceiling, but at the same time, I think we all knew going into this that the risk with that was that, you know, the confidence, it was there in word form only. You can say and talk and tell yourself and tell other people and have former players talk about you too and say all the, we've done this 1,000 times over the years with these players. You can tell everyone this guy is great. If he doesn't believe it completely and truly that you're going to have an answer for him the minute something goes the other way, or you're not going to be able, or, you know, it doesn't matter. Like, the ceiling is gone. And so what we see in this game, and we've seen it in every game Milton's played, there have been stretches where he looks like he knows exactly what he's supposed to be doing, and then something will go haywire, and then his confidence will go, and then it'll fade. And in a game like this against Wisconsin, the first play of the game turns into an interception. What happens on the very next time he drops back? He throws it right to a Wisconsin linebacker, like right in his chest, because his confidence is gone, and now he looks to the sideline and he says, well, that's it. I don't know what we're going to do, because we don't have, you know, they don't have that sideline to player whatever that you need to be able to grind through adversity. And their roster just isn't at a point in terms of depth where they can rely or lean on anybody that can come in there and say, I've been through it, guys. I've done it. I know how to do this. I know how to get out of this. I can, you know, look at me, help, you know, follow me. The closest thing to that would be somebody like Carlo Kemp, who, and, you know, Carlo Kemp's a, you know, great kid, and works his butt off and all this stuff, but he was on that 16, he didn't play on that 16 team. Not really. I mean, he was on the team, but he didn't really play. You know what I mean? So, I mean, like, Eubanks would be another one, but I mean, he's struggling too. So there's guys like, there's just, it's a combination of a lot of things, but at the end of the day, the thread that runs through the whole thing that's so challenging is your program is being run in a way that the details, I mean, you can say all these things, but they're clearly not being stressed enough. I mean, at a detailed level of, you know, this is what, you know, X, Y, Z, and maybe that part of that's the pandemic that's made all these mistakes sort of magnify. But when we look around and we say, well, Wisconsin just got out there with 20 days off couldn't play a game, couldn't practice for all we know for stretches of that, but they run their program in a way to where they knew that when they went out on the field, this is how this was going to go, and if certain things were taken away, this is what we were going to do to respond. Michigan doesn't do that at all, and that's why it trickles down. I mean, you feel bad for a kid like Joe Milton, and I wouldn't give up on somebody like Joe Milton. And obviously, if you're Harbaugh, you've got to look at all options here, including McNamara, but you know, it's part of the product of the situation that you're playing under. I mean, there's just not a lot of confidence happening here, and guys that have never done this before aren't just going to magically have it, you know, like they're, you know, once-in-a-lifetime guy just dropped out of the sky onto your head to save you. They just don't have anybody that can do that, and this is what you're seeing as a result.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Nick, these last two games against Wisconsin, Wisconsin has outscored Michigan, I believe, 84-25, and the rushing yards, 700 rushing yards for Wisconsin in two games, yeah. 87 for Michigan. And it's just like you watch Wisconsin play and you're like, that is a program that knows exactly what they want to be, exactly who they are, exactly what their identity is. Mm-hmm. They have a system, they recruit to it, they know how to identify players who fit what they want to do. They know that if a guy has come up in their system, then when it's his time, he's going to be ready to go. You know, they replace players and they don't really miss a beat. I mean, that's what Michigan wants to be, and it's been glaring in these last two years, these two games against Wisconsin. It's just, there's one team out there that really knows what they want to be, yeah. And there's another team out there that's 6 years into Jim Harbaugh's tenure and still hasn't figured it out. You know, we don't know, you know, this far into Jim Harbaugh's time at Michigan, we still don't know what they really want to be. And Nick, I mean, you've seen this whole trajectory with this program from, yeah. from before Harbaugh to where we are now. Is this back to where it was before Harbaugh? I mean, have they hit that low, or is there still, you know, can we at least say, well, you know, they're bad, but they're not right. as bad as they were?
That's a great question, because there's two parts to that. I think when you look at what's happening on the field. In terms of that lack of player certainty, when you look around and you see guys that are looking to each other and just don't have any answers, and they're looking to the sideline and don't have any answers. I mean, I've talked to a lot of those guys over the years that played on the 14 team that were here when Brady left or was fired. And then a lot of those guys, those same guys stayed and were here, you know, the next winter. And the biggest thing, Harbaugh gave them confidence. When he came in here, he gave them confidence. He gave them assurance that they were here for a reason. He gave them a plan. He gave them something that they, you know, this is what we're going to do, hell or high water. I just was coaching the Super Bowl 2 years ago, right? Like, I mean, there's confidence there that when you watch the guys at the end of the Hoke tenure, that's what it felt like. Saturday's game against Wisconsin that's what it looked like to me. So in that sense, yes, that's where that was. When I remember back to watching like Michigan's games against like Utah that year, where they were just miserable. Minnesota was even worse. They lost to Rutgers on the road that year. You know, Maryland at home in a game that, you know, they should have won, but, you know, four or five things or two or three things don't go your way, and then everything just falls apart and they don't know how to hold it together. They did a lot of that, right, where they would start out well and then one thing would happen and they would just collapse. So that's what this looks like, I mean, in a lot of ways. So in that sense, in terms of player confidence in what the plan is, I would say, yeah, that's where you're at. Now, in terms of the grander scale of things, that's where this gets more difficult because, you know, where are you as a program? With Brady Hoke, it was, you know, so you go back even further. Go back to the Rich Rod. Lloyd Carr retires. You go and change everything. So you go from running one system to changing everything completely in 1 year, and obviously that's going to be a transition. So you go 3-8, 5-7, 7-5. They fire Rich Rod as he's kind of maybe moving up toward what would have been maybe his best team. Did they fire him a year too early? Maybe they did. I don't know. Look back on that. Brady comes in. It's 11-2, 8-5, 7-6, 5-7. 4 years of, you know, every year got literally worse on the record sheet. So this has been 10-2, 10-2, 8-4, 10-2, 9-3, 8-4, whatever it was last year. So it's been start and stop, start and stop, but it hasn't completely fallen off the grade here in terms of consistent losing records. So that's the question, right? Is it? I don't think that it's at that place that it was at where Brady was here, where it's so unsalvageable. Now, if they lose like their entire recruiting class and nobody stays committed and whatever, you could argue that's where you're at. The bigger question here, though, should be, Austin, and this is one I'd like your opinion on, it shouldn't be necessarily about where the trajectory has been through 6 years. It has been about the fact that it's the same after 6 years and probably getting gradually worse. And it looks like it might now start to begin that really weird downturn. So do you want to make a change before that inevitably happens, or do you not think that's inevitable? And that's the question that Michigan has to ask itself right now in the coming weeks. And I'd like to, you know, same question to you. I would, you know, your thoughts looking on it from that side, you know, because it's kind of like two or three things in the air that you're juggling here when you look at these things.
Yeah, I thought back the other night to just, you know, just a little more than a year ago, a night very similar to Saturday night, you know, under the lights, rainy, cold. Michigan's playing Notre Dame, and the conditions are terrible. And Michigan says, you know what, we're going to run it down Notre Dame's throat, and there's not a damn thing they can do about it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Michigan did it. And that, you know, those types of games with Jim Harbaugh, I think that was the saving grace. You know, that when things were not great with Jim Harbaugh, you could always say, yeah, you know, but his teams, they come through at certain times that make all of this worthwhile, you know? And I just, it's really hard for me to see Michigan getting back to that point with Jim Harbaugh. You know, right now as we sit here today, if you ask me if Michigan will get back to that point where they're playing at the level that they were even a year ago, you know, even a year ago, mm-hmm. I would say I don't see it. So that's when I think you have to say, what really do we gain by continuing to, you know, pound your head against the wall in a way? You know, I think if you're a Michigan fan who feels like it's time to just pull the Band-Aid off with Jim Harbaugh, I think your fear is probably that, look, Michigan plays Rutgers this week, winless Penn State after Thanksgiving.
What they get Maryland.
Yeah. Talk about teams that are not feeling good right now. Yeah. Then they get Maryland at home. So if you win your next three, finish with Ohio State, you lose to Ohio State, play, you know, Purdue or Nebraska or whoever they have in that crossover game with the West, you somehow finish the season 5-4. And then you say, well, you know, let's do a 2-year contract extension because we don't really believe that this is working, but we're not quite ready to just pull the Band-Aid off. I think if you're a Michigan fan who, you know, feels like this has run its course, that's probably your fear.
Yeah.
For me, as I sit here right now, you know, in a way, if you're Michigan and you really look at this strategically, Jim Harbaugh's got 1 year left on his deal. We all know that. In terms of the price that you pay to make a coaching change, it's really not that expensive. You know, you look at what South Carolina is going to pay Will Muschamp because he got an extension. I mean, that's what happens. These coaches get extensions, and it's that second contract that really comes back to bite you if you have to make a change. And, you know, Michigan's not there right now with Jim Harbaugh. So that's a factor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's going to be a weird year with the coaching carousel. A lot of schools who are on the fence may not make changes this year because of the financial situation with the pandemic. So, you know, if you're a school that's in a position to make a change, you actually could have some leverage there because there's probably not going to be a lot of movement and there's probably not going to be a lot of schools in position to give raises and contract extensions this cycle. So if you're a school that has an attractive job and you have the resources to do it, those are the things I think Ward Manuel's got to be thinking about right now is what is our position in the marketplace? What's the end game here? Ward Manuel's not going to walk into Jim Harbaugh's office tomorrow and say, Jim, hand me your whistle. You're done. It's not going to happen.
God, I'd like to see that scene.
But you know what? It's definitely time to be gaming out all of that stuff and thinking, okay, if we do go to the marketplace this year with our job, what's the environment going to be?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, and I hate to always go back to this one person and give him credit for everything, but Urban Meyer had a little line on the show that reminded me of something we were talking about on here last week and stuff that we've written that, you know, when we said Ward Manuel needs to do an evaluation of everything that's happening here. And if you watched, you know, Urban on the show this weekend, I think part of what he said was something along the lines of, you know, he's not about trying to blame a situation on talent, you know, lack of talent or whatever else. It's you have to, as a head coach, be able to, you know, open what he said, open the hood and really diagnose and really be honest with yourself. Mm-hmm. Really, truly be like hard objective about everything you're doing. And it's not just what you're calling on third and six. It's what you're doing in your recruiting department on March 7th or whatever, right? Like it's every single detail that is happening inside your place. And if it is not razor focused, because we have seen, you know, we talk this all the time. People give us these things all the time. They say, you know, well, you know, Bama and LSU always have these great players. They're cheating, right? You know, and so-and-so has all these great players. They're cheating, right? You know, cheating. I'm not directly accusing anyone of cheating here, but we know cheating happens in college football, okay? But what we can also say, though, is that the teams that are consistently competitive at that level don't ever have days where it's not razor focused the whole year, the whole year, everything you do. You are paying Jim Harbaugh to run a program that runs like that in terms of efficiency. And I got to tell you, if you did a full on objective look inside the hood here and found no efficiency issues, I would say that Michigan has bigger jobs that need to be filled because you're not going to be honest with yourself. There's no way he'd be able to look at this entire picture with a rational mind and say that, you know, yeah, we could be better here, X, Y, and Z. They could be better in a lot of areas. In a lot of areas in terms of their development, I'm sure. You can't play like that and then tell us that everything is perfect, right? You can't. You can't go out there and say that everything you're doing on a minute-by-minute basis is the way that it needs to be because it's just not. And the pandemic obviously is going to magnify all of this, and I think that's what we're seeing here. But we said this in August. This season is going to show which coaching staffs have their shit together and which are telling you that they have their shit together. And right now, what are we, four games in? Michigan is in the latter of the column of the coaching staffs that have been telling us that they have it together rather than the Indiana-Wisconsin variety who have been fully confident in knowing of their process and plan and they just went out there and played. They just went out there and played. Michigan said in the summer, give us 2 weeks, we'll be ready to play. No, they needed a lot more time than that. They needed a spring. They needed the full summer. They need a lot of work in a lot of areas. And it's not just about what you do week to week. It's got to be about every single day. These things that we hear from these programs that run at these peak efficiency levels. I mean, obviously talent is a huge factor. It's 90% of everything, right? But the last 10% is the hardest. And they just haven't been running at that type of efficiency. There's just no way you can argue otherwise. I mean, there's not. And while we don't know all these details because we don't see what happens in practice, I mean, it's been 6 years. I just don't know how they could make an argument, you know, paint it to us in any other way. And if you were honest with yourself in terms of your evaluation, I think you would probably see that. And if you didn't, you know, then, you know, I don't know what else to say. But I mean, at bottom minimum level, I would say some serious changes, no matter what you do here in terms of the head coach, would have to follow. I just don't know what all those would be. And I don't know how that would all go, like you said.
Yeah, I watched that segment with Urban Meyer, and I thought it was interesting to hear him say basically that he never allowed his staff to say we have a talent issue. Sure. And look, if anybody who's right, ever coached in the Big Ten understood the importance of having talent, right. It was Urban Meyer. If you look at the way he built that program, I mean, they are a machine right. In acquiring talent. So, you know, he's not saying that, like, the talent is irrelevant, obviously. But, I get what he was saying is basically that you have the team you have.
Yes.
Like, there's nothing you can do on the recruiting side to fix things if you're going out there on game day and you're getting your ass kicked, you know? So in Michigan's position, like, there's nothing you can go back and do to change what you did in recruiting 2 or 3 years ago. You have the team you have right now. And look, Michigan's had some, you know, they've had some tough breaks. Nico Collins opted out. Ambry Thomas opted out. Aiden Hutchinson out for the year. One of your best players. Quiddy Pay didn't play. Jalen Mayfield didn't play. I mean, you take
all of your best players.
Yeah. You take five of the best players off of any team in the Big Ten, you're going to struggle. So, you know, not an excuse, but a fact that Michigan is, you know, they're playing without some of their best guys. But still, you know, you look at the team that they had on the field Saturday, and you just, you know, you have to ask, like, you know, what went wrong? Because, you know, I mean, they're playing shorthanded on the defensive line, but still, to see Wisconsin just go up and down the field, Michigan should have the talent on this team to be able to be more competitive even without the frontline players that weren't out there. And that, to me, is the part of it that, you know, if you want to say Jim Harbaugh, you know, his 2018 class, it wasn't good enough, the 2017 class, too many guys, too much attrition, totally valid. And I agree with all of that. But I also think, you know what? On game day, you've got the team that you've got, and the really good coaches figure out a way to get it done with the team that they have. And right now, Michigan's just not doing that. I think that's all you can say.
Yeah, we used to talk about back in 18, like, they had a 20-man class that ended up being rated number 22 in the country. And we used to talk back then and say, okay, well, that's not going to be good enough if you want to be in the playoff contention, if you want to be in the playoff conversation. You got to be in that top seven, you know, top six, probably somewhere in there. And even then, you're going to have a tough. So that was the conversation back then. But what this has turned into is something different. And I hope people aren't using the same exact criteria because, you know, when you go through it and say the 2018 class was ranked number 20, whatever, you know, 22. And then in 2019, they're able to rebound and have a top 10 class. In 2020, they're able to rebound and have 14. So it's not terrible, but it's not going to get you in that top level. But what that is and should be is good enough to not have something like we saw on Saturday, which is that you apparently have no answers anywhere. And so this has to come back to coaching. They're not coaching it well enough, or they're not organized well enough at a top-down level in terms of their plan 12 months out of the year, 365, to do this. Coaching at a high level in college football, I don't know. You tell me if I'm wrong, Austin, if you disagree. It's harder than it is in the NFL. This is harder. This is way harder. It's a way harder job that requires so much more out of your head coach. My God, there's so many things that person has to be able to thread the needle on that, you know, a lot of times we just don't see it. I mean, is there a connection between Jim Harbaugh and every guy on this roster? Because in a lot of places, there is. Maybe not every single guy, but like deeper than this, to where you got guys out there that are going to be willing to hold the rope a little bit longer for you than just being like, well, it's 28-0 and we haven't completed a pass. Like, that is insanity. I don't care how bad their 2018 class was. And in some ways, that's a great way to, and we've all written it, a great way to frame exactly where they're at from a talent standpoint. But the 22nd ranked class in 2018, that core should be good enough to be competitive in a game like that. Maybe not to beat Wisconsin on Saturday there, because Wisconsin's a good football program, but to not get just completely pantsed at home like that, that's a failure of leadership at the top level. And that is why we say again that when this year is over, or before then and now, and even right now, Ward Manuel has to do some real soul searching about what he wants to do or where he wants to go with this program. And Jim Harbaugh has to do some serious soul searching with himself about whether or not he is capable of inspiring, motivating, and pushing forward college-age players the way he was when this started, the way he was when he was at Stanford, and the way he was when he was at San Diego. Because this is not the same. This is not the same. And he has to decide if he has that in him or if he doesn't. And he has to be objective with himself because he's not 45 anymore. He's right. I mean, he's not old. He's still got, you know, a lot of time left. But if he cares about this place the way he, you know, says he does, and I believe that he does, then he has to be honest with himself about his ability to do this because his program is bigger than him. And people need to remember that. He needs to remember that. I think he does know that. I think everybody knows that. But that's something that has to be there when they guide through this. If you don't have it, if you can't do this, if you can't get them to, for whatever reason, you know, and I'm not saying it's even anything you blame on anything other than maybe sometimes it just happens. I don't know. But if you can't get them to do that for you, to buy in for you, to, you know, hold the rope for you for four quarters and just play with, you know, like he said today, cut loose and let it go. If you can't get them to get there, then you can't be doing this. And that's the question that not only Michigan has to ask, he has to ask it of himself. And I think that that's something, as you go forward with this contract situation, that all parties involved need to be honest with each other about, you know, what's going on here, what needs to be done, and where it can't be a one person making this decision. It has to be a collaborative deal because you got to know what you're facing. You got to know what you're up against. And you got to know what your answers need to be when you go forward in whatever that avenue is. And right now, I don't know if they have many of those.
Yeah, that's where it's at right now. And we heard Jim Harbaugh after the game say, basically the thing that you've been saying for a long time is we need to look at every aspect of what we're doing. We need to go back to square one, basically, and say, you know, what we're doing here isn't working, so what do we have to do to fix it? Mm-hmm. And you know, we talked to Jim Harbaugh today. He was he was not going to go into any specifics whatsoever of what they need to change. Not going to talk specifically about players. I asked him about the quarterback thing, and you know, just not going to go there. He's not going to call out his players. He's not going to say, well, you know, this guy did this, and this is what we got to fix. Not going to call out Don Brown. Clearly, he's just not going to go there right now publicly. But the one thing that did come through, I think that today when we talked to him, he wanted to send the message that, look, I'm still up for this. Like, this is still what I do. Like, I am not, you know, I'm not complacent. I'm not, you know, in a position in my career where, you know, I've been coaching a long time and I've been to the Super Bowl and, you know, I don't have the, you know, don't have the energy anymore to take on a challenge like this. He clearly wanted to get the message out there that, you know, this is what I do. I can't imagine doing anything else. I'm in the foxhole with these guys and I'm going to get it fixed because it's my job to do that. That was his message today. You know, it's the only thing he can say in this situation.
Yeah.
I don't know that it's going to, you know, like inspire a ton of confidence on the outside from people who feel like he's just kind of lost his touch here. But I think that if you get to the end of this season and we haven't seen things turn around, I think Jim Harbaugh would have to be honest with himself, as you say, and admit that, you know, it was his job to get this thing turned around. It didn't happen. Maybe we get to a point where Jim Harbaugh, you know, as much as this place means to him, as much as he cares about this program, as invested as he is in this job, you know, maybe the way this ends is he gets to a point where he says, you know what, my message isn't getting through here. I think that's, you know, that's what we have to find out over the next 4 or 5 weeks of this season, because if we get to the end and we're still saying this and it still seems like there's this disconnect, then I think we have to be honest with the fact that whatever Jim Harbaugh's message is, it's just not getting through.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I have no doubt that he cares deeply about the program and the players, you know, and wants them to succeed and wants them. I mean, that's his number one promise when he you know, offers them a scholarship. I want you to come here so I can help you become the best player you can be, to get you drafted and to make sure that you have success in the NFL that I was able to have because I came here and I had people who cared about me and helped me do the same thing, right? That's the goal. That was the goal at the start. That's the goal now. It also happened to be that they want to win championships, and the latter part's not happening. So I have no doubt that he wants the best for all these guys, but at the same time, he's not infallible, and we can't just sit here and say that, you know, people did this for 4.5 years, probably, maybe 5, I don't know. You know, you call them excuses if you want, call them anything else, but people built up these stories about why this hadn't happened or why that hadn't happened. And by the time you looked up, you were like, you guys have a story for why 1,000 things haven't happened, but you don't have a story for why anything has happened. And it's just like, at some point, that has to be where you look. And I just, you know, it's got to be about, you know, does he have the ability to have a staff stay organized, keep a plan together for the whole time, and make sure everybody on the team, every player that's going to touch the field, every player that's going to touch a part of that game plan when it comes into action, that every one of those guys has, as much as he reasonably can, has not only confidence in what the plan is, but confidence in their abilities and their preparation, that when a curveball happens, they're going to be able to adjust to it, because they can't adjust to anything. That's what this is. They have a plan for your fastball, and if you're a team that throws 3 pitches, you're going to strike them out on 4, because the first one they might foul off, and the next 3 they're missing because you're not coming back with the fastball, and they're not going to have a response for anything that you have. And that's, I don't know baseball, but, you know, Jim Harbaugh said it once, he thought I did, I don't, right? But like in any event, that's how this is going to go, because they don't have a counter to anything. They don't have the ability to hang on there. And yeah, that's why we talk so much about confidence, because confidence, and that was part of the plan when he first got here too, was, you know, get these guys confident in their ability and their plan and get them repped to a point where they know what they're going to do. And that at worst, if it doesn't go the way that it's supposed to go, they're going to fight so hard that it won't matter, and we'll still end up getting a net positive out of that play. And all of them added up at the end are going to be a net result of a win. And they're not doing that anymore. That's not really been the case for a minute here. We've had a lot of this whistling through the graveyard confidence talk from guys talking about how this is the greatest that, or he's the best this, and blah, 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 and all this. And it's nothing more than kids talking. And it's fine. They're kids. You know, I take issue sometimes with people, and I've probably done it myself in years past, people knocking on kids for talking about how they think they're going to be good. Well, what the hell else are they supposed to say, right?
Yeah,
it's the coach's job to get them in a situation where that's real. And that can be backed up on the field with tape. And it's not happening. Harbaugh said it. We saw him in January. One of the last times we saw him in person at the pandemic, before the pandemic, at the Lansing thing, at the coaching convention. Mm-hmm. Your brand is your tape.
Yeah.
Nobody on this team right now has any tape that they could show off to anybody that would do anything different. And that's coaching. That's day-to-day, making sure that everything is done the way it can be done. And that's probably a process that would have had to start long before this year started, to where there's a culture in place of accountability, of attention to detail every single day. Nobody's whining about their own situation. Nobody's whining about how they're getting screwed. Nobody's whining about how I should be playing, this guy shouldn't be playing. If Harbaugh wants to look at somebody in the face and say he doesn't have any of that going on in his team right now, he'd be lying. He would never say that, but also he's never going to put himself in a situation where anyone's going to be able to ask him. So that's the other part of the thing that's happening here. But that's all happening here, and it's none of it's good. And it's stuff that, can you reverse it? Maybe. Would I bet on it? No. I don't know if I would say it's impossible, but right now where we sit today, it just doesn't look like this is going to be able to get back to where it was. And, we'd have to see something pretty drastic, like you said, also in these next couple of weeks to change any minds on that one.
All right, folks. Well, I know it's tough out there right now. Here in the state of Michigan, we're all going to be staying at home for a few weeks here. We've had a lot of practice with that. But hey, hang in there. Michigan football is probably not making you feel any better today, but hopefully hopefully you're enjoying the podcasts and the stories at The Athletic. We really appreciate everybody supporting our work and listening to the show. Nick, I think you'll be back later this week talking to Colton about the Spartans. So until then, thanks everybody for checking out The Beat.